but it was as if there was nothing there for his mind to send. An idea presented itself to him. Before he could think about all the ways it wouldn't work, he summoned the nether and wrapped it around the two dots of stream. The spark seemed to brighten for a moment, but remained invisible to his inner eye. He shook his head. "It's like trying to move a limb I don't have." "Now I understand," Blaze said. "Not having one would explain why you think they can talk." Gladig seated himself cross-legged and scowled up at the two flecks of gold. Volo walked in a circle around Dante, mouth twisted to the side. A part of him expected her to unlock the secret right away, as she'd done with the glimpse. Yet the sparks didn't show any sign of being affected. The four of them spent the next minute in near silence. Without warning, the two pieces of stream winked away, nowhere to be found. "Did someone do that?" Dante said. Gladick lifted an eyebrow.
"If we had, would that not be proof of the talent to move them, and hence a favorable outcome?"
"We can stare at the stream all day without getting anywhere. How do we actually wield it?"
"What if we're getting ahead of ourselves?"
Blaze rubbed the back of his arm.
"When I was at Pocket Cove, they broke our training with the nether into several sections. First, they taught us to see the nether. Second, to touch it. And lastly, to grasp it. Right now, we're trying to skip straight to the grand finale. But maybe we should try to learn how to touch the stream first."
"That's inefficient," Dante said. "When I learned the nether, I went straight to using it. I didn't even have to see it first."
"You seem to be forgetting that you had the original cycle lending you a hand, and that you turned out to be one of the greatest nethermancers of our generation. These people don't even have a broadsheet calling the Emperor a wanker, let alone a holy book that teaches you how to wield the stream's power without you knowing that you're being taught. I'd say that baby steps are all we've got."
"Agreed," Gladick said. "Many of the acolytes within the Malus Church show little potential, but even modest talent in the ether is too valuable to be thrown away. Those who are strong may leap to the top of their studies in a handful of bounds, but those who are weaker, more steps are needed to convey them to the heights."
As they spoke, two dabs of stream returned from nowhere, circulating in the air between them. Dante let out a huff of air.
"Fine. We'll try to learn to touch it. How'd they teach you to do that at Pocket Cove?"
Blaze tipped back his head.
"I don't wholly remember. I think it involved a lot of naked swimming, and searching for exotic sea snails."
"We'll just find where the Odosein keep their ocean, then." "How can you not remember learning to shadow walk?"
"Because unlike the rest of you who get into these things, I'm not an obsessive moon calf about it. I'd tell you to Loon Nack to ask Min what she taught me, except she's over in Pocket Cove right now, isn't she?
I think the process involved breathing."
"Breathing? Like, with your lungs?"
"That sounds like an arcane process, to be sure."
Blaze paced about the grass.
"Hang on. Part of the reason I'm having a tough time remembering is because I ripped through it like used cheesecloth."
He snapped his fingers.
"That was it. I employed my waves a muscle technique. And once my head was all calmed down, I swooped in on the nether from the side. Caught it completely off guard."
"Waves a muscle?" "I veto this discussion."
"The name more or less describes exactly what it is. The technique's a way to train yourself to be able to murder your foes at maximum efficiency, but it's also a good way to get your brain to shut up and let you think. What you do is isolate a group of muscles,
The ones around your ears and eyes, say. Then tense them hard when breathing out. Then, as you inhale, you relax them. On the next breath, you move down to the next set of muscles, the ones in your jaw and neck, and repeat the process all until you get down to your feet. Dante found that he was already flexing the muscles on his face and ears. He made himself stop. What does any of this have to do with learning sorcery? Beats the hell out of me. And Min. All I know is that I did it, then came at the nether like a big, sexy hawk, and it worked. Dante glanced at Era, expecting to see her rolling her eyes or drooling with scornful laughter, but she was presently looking uncharacteristically non-judgmental, which only happened on the rare occasions they were saying something she found unbelievably stupid. "This seems dumb," Dante said, "but it also seems like it'll only take a few minutes to test out. You might as well go first." Blaze rolled his shoulders. "The women present might want to avert their eyes to avoid a sudden loss of consciousness." Volo giggled. Era's expression reverted to its natural state of witnessing unbelievable stupidity. Blaze inhaled deeply through his nose, then cocked his head. "I've spotted a flaw in this plan. I can't seem to see any of the stream."
"That's because you're bad at..."
Dante trailed off, turning in a confused circle. "Hold on. Where did it go?"
Volo and Gladick looked about, but they too couldn't see a single golden speck.
"This makes no sense," Dante said. "We're all able to see it. We've taught ourselves that much. So why can't we see any of it right now?"
Volo quirked her mouth.
"Maybe it's gone."
"Gone where?"
"The nether's all around us. So is the ether. Once you know how to see them, they're always there. So where is the stream?"
"Perhaps our skills remain weak," Gladick said. "Hence it is only when we actively focus that we can see it."
"And all four of us are exactly as bad at seeing it. So it disappears from all four of us at exactly the same time?"
"When phrased as such, it does not seem likely."
Dante rubbed the corners of his eyes.
"Then, is it disappearing somewhere? Hiding?"
Blaze stretched his arms over his head.
"I know one way to get it to show its face. Show it a pretty mind forest."
While he was still mid-sentence, a little golden firefly appeared behind his head, circled to his side, and drifted in irregular loops.
"Now, that's strange, isn't it? I hadn't even thought of a single tree yet."
"You didn't need to, because you were just inspired."
Gladick's mouth fell open. He tilted back his head at the blue of the sky, like he was being granted a vision from the gods.
"You're suggesting that, unlike ether and nether, the stream isn't permanent? Rather, it is created?"
"That's not what I'm suggesting at all," Dante said. "That's impossible."
"Why so? Because the elements that we are familiar with do not act in the same fashion? You yourself stated that the key to seeing the stream was to think deeply and in detail about the forest. What is this but a focused way to find inspiration?"
"All right, that's plausible. And if the stream is constantly fading away, that's another reason that nobody else even knows it exists. Most of the time, it isn't there."
"Look!"
Volo pointed above their heads. There, a dozen slivers of gold had sprung into existence, tossing gently in slow circles.
"You guys just made those, while you were talking."
"While we were debating." Feeling lightheaded, Dante gawked at Era.
That's why you invented Danakide, isn't it? To turn your entire society into an ongoing source of the stream for you to use.
Close enough, she said. Close enough to be given the truth. In practice, the golden stream fades away much too fast for us to get any use out of what the people spark up while they're arguing away with each other. But what this custom does accomplish is to train every single citizen to be a potential knight of Odosein. As with your warlock degeneracy, most of them show little talent for it. Through Danakide, those who are good at it become very easy to spot.
Blaze scratched the back of his head. That's a bit manipulative, tricking your whole society into arguing all day long, just to make your job a little easier.
The concept of Danakide is wrong, then. When they reason their way to a better premise, and share that new idea with those around them, they aren't making themselves and their people wiser and stronger.
That part sounds noble enough. It's the part where you're totally deceiving them that feels deceptive.
Era laughed in derision.
So what if we lie to them? We improve their lives with Danakide, while also using it to prevent them from being turned into the Blighted, or from being eaten alive by them. How horrible. How shameful. Your brilliant foreign logic has lifted the blinders from my eyes. We'll go serve our citizens up to the Aiden Rane at once.
Blaze held up his hands.
All right, goodness, for someone who thinks arguing is so great, you sure hate to be disagreed with.
Your arguments stink like fish carcasses. You're not angry at me when you make a bad one. You're embarrassed at yourself for having made them. She swept a strand of hair from her brow.
If you're done condemning the Odosein for preserving our people against a threat that would have destroyed any of your worthless countries centuries ago, I'd like to congratulate you.
It only took you a week to discover what it took us 50 years to work out.
That's how long it took to found the Odosein, Dante said. Does that mean we're ready to learn your story?
Just how much do you think you've actually accomplished here? So you've worked out a few facts we've known about for hundreds of years?
Get back to work.
The flickers of steam they'd generated earlier were nearly all gone. Blaze started in on his flexing and relaxation routine. Dante refused to even think of it by name. But before he could finish and swoop in on the golden dots, the last of them vanished.
Unless we get extremely lucky, we're going to need a steady source of the stream, Dante said.
Bolo, you're the best at generating it consistently. Mind dreaming up a few forests for us?
Yeah, she said. But I'll do it anyway.
She smoothed out her mat, took a seat, and closed her eyes. Blaze resumed his routine. Era watched him for a moment, but grew bored of the sight almost immediately, which Dante found gratifying.
It will be some minutes before the girl has assembled her inner world in enough detail to begin generating sparks, Gladick said. In the meantime, shall we take up the Garnassus of Ohelion?
Dante looked at him, as if Gladick had suggested they disrobe for a wrestling match. The Garnassus was a historic debate between two Malish scholars named Holowick the Stout and Bordrang the Black, dating back 400 years and concerning the trials of a man named Tarlan, who is repeatedly wronged and seeks a variety of revenges on his foes. It was primarily used to provide a framework within which neophyte scholars could debate the nature of moral action, particularly whether it was absolute or influenced by the context around it.
Oh,
Dante said. You want to see if we can create some stream of our own. Do you want the position of Holowick or Bordrang? Bordrang. Gladick sounded like he was tasting the word and finding it to his liking. I've always chosen Holowick. It is time to try a different cause. They set to arguing, with Dante going first. He'd usually found Holowick the Stout to be safe and predictable, but Gladick made his counterpoints so fiendishly that Dante fought to keep himself on tenable ground. As Gladick argued that Tarlan's vigilante killing of the man who'd stolen his flock was a fully appropriate response to an attack on Tarlan's ability to clothe and feed himself, a glimmer of gold appeared between them. Blazer's eyes darted to it. He exhaled in a rush, scrunching up his brow. Blaze inhaled and exhaled again. Dante and Gladick resumed the debate. A minute later, the glimmer dwindled away. Blaze shook his head. Nothing. Dante broke off mid-argument with Gladick. You swooped. I swooped. Then I swerved. And for good measure, I tried a flying backwards triple somersault. Still couldn't touch it. Volo's exercise produced her first blot of stream. In almost no time at all, she was putting out a slow but steady flow of the substance. By contrast, Dante and Gladick's production was sporadic and spotty. 20 minutes in, Blaze straightened and stretched back his neck. I don't feel like I'm getting anywhere. Anyone else want to take a shot? Dante took his place, while Blaze started up a raucous argument with Gladick. Performing the wave of muscles felt ridiculous, but it was oddly relaxing. Regardless, Dante was soon so wrapped up in trying to reach the golden stream that he forgot about how ridiculous he might look. One attempt after the other came to failure. It wasn't even like he was bouncing off the moats or sliding across them. It was more like they weren't there at all. He deployed every trick he'd learned in his lifelong efforts to not be terrible with the ether, but none bore fruit. When he grew frustrated, he switched out for Gladick, who switched out in turn for Volo. They lunched, then spent the remainder of the afternoon beating their heads against the wall of the stream. At last, the setting sun informed them it was time to call it quits. It's no wonder the stream is such limited use, Dante said. You can barely gin up enough of it to see it. And a speck of it barely lasts long enough for you to get mad at it before it fades away. Blaze clapped him on the shoulder. You make it sound like we spent the day failing so badly, our mothers don't know whether to disown us or blow our inheritance on hemlock. I say we made a lot of progress today. A few more steps forward like this, and we'll be ready to go bash the lich's big white head in. Dante wasn't too sure about the last part, but he was heartened by the rest. He'd let himself get dragged down by nothing. Just like always, the elation of success had been as short-lived as a mayfly. For today's success became tomorrow's normal. And when failure rose over your head like cold water, the memory of your last successful gasp of air was no comfort at all. He was asleep, and enjoying it very much, when something twitched in his ear. This startled him so violently that he fell halfway from his wicker bed. The pulse came a second time. A loon. He touched his ear. Yes? My lord? Most likely. Who's this? Why, it's Jonah, sir. Still drunk on sleep, it took Dante a moment to place the name. Naren's mate from the Sod of the South. The room in the tower was utterly dark except for a band of moonlight slicing through the gauzy curtains. The others were snoring, but if Dante kept up his conversation, they wouldn't be for long. Dante slipped out the door and into the stairwell that connected the two rooms comprising that floor of the tower.
"Jonah," he said, "I understand that the Colin Basin is far away from here, but I'll assure you that it's the middle of the night in Tanaratane as well."
"Oh, most sincere and severe apologies for waking you, but I bring news from Eris Ossus."
"Eris Ossus? How?"
"Well, being that's where I am, sir."
"I thought you were in the Colin Basin, Jonah."
"Yes, I was. Right up until I wasn't."
"Your presence there was a way to keep us in contact with the entire region. Who authorized your departure?"
"Why, Captain Naren did, Lord."
"How? He couldn't possibly have made it to Colin already."
"He's authorized me now, you see."
"Now that you're in Eris Ossus?"
"He authorized you retroactively?"
"Indeed. It's a mariner thing, you see. Wouldn't expect a man of your stature to be bothered with our customs, crude as they can be."
"Try me, Jonah. Why did you feel you could leave Colin without my authorization?"
"Well, Captain Naren is my captain, my lord. And you're just some lord."
"I suppose there's no arguing with that." Dante frowned down the dim stairwell. "You're right. You're not my subject, Jonah, and I'm grateful for your help over these last few months, even though you owed me nothing. Naren made it to Eris Ossus all right, then. Why are you two still there? Looking for passage out?"
"That would be somewhat redundant, I think, since we have the Sword of the South right here. The crew snuck back into port some time ago to search for the captain."
"I was worried Naren might never see his ship again. Thanks for letting me know."
"You're welcome, Lord. But I didn't wake you at Hell's own hour of the night to let you know that everything is well and good. There's been an attack on Eris Ossus."
"By the monsoon?"
"They were part of it, to be sure. Along with a horde of ghouls."
Dante had been pacing about the stairwell. Hearing this, he stopped short.
"The Blighted. Was the White Lich with them?"
Jonah repeated the question, voice faint. In the background, Naren's voice answered, too indistinct for Dante to make out.
Jonah said,
"Captain doesn't think so, but there was certainly a lesser lich at hand. I don't know what such a thing as that might be, but I'm guessing the both of you do. It was an ugly night. Very ugly. Even after we turned the tide and were driving the ghouls from the city, they were carrying captives off with them, young and old alike. Don't think I'll forget their screams for some time."
"How were the defenders able to drive off the lesser lich? Were there sorcerers present?"
"Oh, it was quite a scene, my lord. The lich and his ghouls seized the outer districts with hardly a loss. The fighting in the city proper was as vicious as you'll ever see, yet one by one, the towers fell. The Tenarians retreated to make their last stand on Turtleback Island. They knocked down the only bridge to it. But the ghouls waded through the water like they had no need for air at all. With the lich at their backs, casting his sorcery about, they broke the front ranks of the defenders. But just as they were set to break through and capture the whole port, two knights in scaled armor, charged with blazing purple swords. Gods, it was a sight. The lich's foul magic stopped dead. One of the knights was dragged down by the ghoulish hordes, but the second cut the lich clear in twain. After that, the ghouls fought like the demons they are, looked ready to die to the last of them. But just like that,
they turned and retreated from the city in a great mass, snatching up whoever they could grab along the way.
Dante's mouth had gone dry.
You said one of the Odosein, the knights, died in battle. What about the other one?
Why, he's being showered with meat and ale as we speak, Lord.
I need you and Naren to find him. You can't let him leave the city. He may be our only hope of victory.
The captain had similar thoughts. You see, sir, the Tenarians might have won this battle, but they suffered most horrible losses, and the Drake Bane's already drawn off most of the city's best soldiers in his boats. Captain Naren thinks that if the devils muster a second attack, the entire city will fall. The slaughter that would come after would make what happened in the Cullen Basin look like a slap fight. Tens of thousands of people, sir. Captain Naren thinks you're the only one who can stop that from coming to pass.
If the next attack is led by another lesser lich, he may be right. But if it's headed by the Aedan Rani, we'll all die. But we're in the middle of learning to use the Odosein ourselves. We can't afford to abandon our training right now.
Yes, the captain thought you'd say something like that.
Then I assume he also knows why we can't go.
Jonah chuckled.
As a matter of fact, he's got a theory, the crafty devil. He figured you'd say that even if 20,000 souls are lost in Aerys Ossis, breaking away from your training would guarantee the loss of infinitely more.
That's exactly what we're looking at. No matter how gruesome things become in the short term, we have to think about what will save us all in the long term.
Captain Naren understands that. Surely he does. But he also asks if you might not find a way to continue your most important training and stop the city from falling to liches and ghouls.
Dante puffed his cheeks with a sigh. To have any hope of that, you have to enlist the surviving knight of Odosein to our side. Do you understand me?
Quite clearly, my lord.
Good. Let me know if and when you've got him. I'll see what I can come up with on my end. He closed the connection to the loon. The stars indicated he had 3 hours until dawn. Judging that the situation wasn't quite an emergency, Dante went back to bed. But he didn't get much sleep. He finally dropped off, only to be shaken awake what felt like minutes later. His eyes were dry and scratchy, but he was lost in a pleasant stupor until he wandered out to the stairwell and remembered that everything had been upended. The others were already at breakfast. He ran down to join them, casting a glance about for lurking servants, before explaining everything that Jonah had told him.
"Shit," Blaze said, after Dante finished. "Rains of it. Hoist the shields high and don't come out until the splatter stops. There's no way we can go to Aerys Ossis."
Dante gave him a puzzled look. "If we made it through the hills once, there's nothing to stop us from doing it again. Aerys Ossis is only a few days from here."
"Yes, and if we make that journey, we might as well find a planet-sized knife to cut the world's throat with. I thought we were here to learn how to stop the White Lich ourselves."
"We are pathetic acolytes, and the gods only know how long it'll take for one of us to gain real skill. Meanwhile, there's a fully trained Odosein who might be willing to help us.
One person, who we've never met before, and who might be willing to help, and who might not get targeted by the White Lich's advance agents, or exposed in a gambit by a lesser lich, or any number of other plans the big fellow will devise in response to the Odosein thwarting his first attack on the city.
Aren't you normally the one who wants to try to save every last man, woman, child, dog, rodent, and cockroach that comes into harm's way?"
"Sure," Blaze said. "But I've also never run into an enemy who might qualify for godhood. Before, no matter what we were up against,
I always thought we stood a chance.
You don't now. This is the first time I'm not sure what we do.
I fear that we have no choice.
Gledek dabbed his mouth with a napkin.
By using his pet sorcerers as proxies, the Aedan Rane has found a way to move more aggressively than we anticipated. If he swallows Aerisosis, he'll have an army of no less than 20,000 blighted. With a force like that, he will absorb the rest of Tanara Tain as fast as he is able to move his troops.
Blaze shrugged. So, we bide our time until we're ready, then ambush him.
Impossible. He'll keep himself in the middle of an entire horde of blighted. We will have no way to get close to him.
Then I'll shadow walk through the horde, or Dante will tunnel in beneath the lich, or we'll deploy any of the thousands of other ways we've learned to kill people over the years.
You forget that as his army grows, his personal strength swells as well. It is likely he will reach a point where he is immune to the effects of Odosein, or even to sorcery as a whole.
It's likely, is it? And what are you basing that on? A long personal friendship with the White Lich? Or was it just the first thing you found when you inserted your head up your ass to search for ideas?
Gladick's white eyebrows knitted together.
I am reporting to you the same information that I have heard from the Drakebane, his mystics, and his historians. I suppose your expertise is superior.
What have you actually done for us, though? Told us about the Prime Body, which plenty of other people seem to have known about.
I got you here. The place which you now believe is vital to our enterprise.
All you did was threaten an old man and his grandchildren.
I'm reasonably sure I could have done that much, assuming I could stop vomiting at the thought of it.
Dante noted, with mild irony, that their increasingly acrimonious discussion was causing a few stray bits of stream to drift above the low-slung breakfast table.
Gladick pounded his open palm on the table, drawing a look from a servant mopping the other side of the chamber.
I have proven my loyalty to our cause time and time again. Now is not the time for division.
Maybe that's exactly what it's time for, Blaze said. If you think you can go to Aerisosis and put down the Lich, nobody's stopping you. I think my efforts are best spent learning to become the only thing that can make him weak enough to stand up to.
Gladick drew back from the table.
A perfectly reasonable suggestion. Who then will go and who shall stay?
Dante saw two paths opening before him, and he was afraid which one he would take. He planted his hands on the table.
Think this through, you fools. The choice doesn't have to be one or the other. It doesn't even have to be made right now. First of all, unless Naren can convince the knight to join us, the whole thing is moot, and we'll stay here. Second, the White Lich might not press the attack until he's had time to regroup in the swamps and add to his ranks. There's no need for us to go anywhere until we know there's going to be another assault on Aerisosis. Until both those conditions are met, we'll continue to train at the spires.
Blaze scratched his thumb against his upper lip.
And what do we do if they are met?
We get to Aerisosis as fast as possible. We stand against the White Lich or whoever he sends in his stead. If we die, we die. If we kill the Aedan Rane, we throw ourselves a party and we won't stop that party until the Tenarians get sick of us and throw us out. But if we only push him into retreat, then we'll come back to the Silent Spires and continue our work.
A couple of golden motes were tumbling near his head. Suddenly annoyed with them, he tried to swat them away, but he couldn't touch them with his hand any more than he could with his mind.
Sounds smart to me, Volo said.
But you guys never care what I have to say."
Dante wanted to assure her that that wasn't true, except it was.
Blaze watched Gladick, waiting for the old man to make his move, then swore.
"Yes, righto. A plan that accounts for all our concerns and contingencies. Only a complete jackass could say no."
Gladick smirked. "Heavens forbid that after all I've seen and done that I be labeled a jackass. I will agree as well. On the condition that Naren liaises with the Tenarians to ensure that enough scouts are deployed to detect a second strike well in advance."
"I'll tell Era our plans."
Dante stood. "If she gets mad about it, try to collect at least part of me to return to Narashtovic." He stepped out of the dining hall and bumped right into Era, who'd been steaming toward it to drag them off to the day's practice. He quickly explained what he'd heard was happening in Erasosis, as well as their plans to deal with it. Era narrowed her eyes.
"If we'd had any interlopers show up to bring us this news, I think I'd have heard them screaming under our knives by now. How did you get this information?"
"Through wicked sorcery."
"I guessed as much. Though you would have surmised that I would guess as much, and fed me a lie you knew I would happily swallow. Be aware that if you've smuggled another of your people into the spires, we will kill you and feed you to our crops. Or maybe we'll eat you ourselves. It's been a very long time since we tasted meat."
Dante called on the Nether and swept his right hand in a long, oval pattern. Beside him, the shadows took on a human shape. He gestured more broadly, more out of show than of need. The figure clarified into a tall woman, dark-haired, lean but strong, capable of swinging a sword or running for an hour straight. Gesturing and working more subtly, Dante added another layer of refinement to his work, honing the woman's eyes and nose and chin. Era's eyes had gone wide. With the illusion complete, a smile spread across her face. For once it wasn't wry or mocking. It was the simple joy of being caught off guard by something delightful. Hesitantly, she reached toward the vision.
"That's how you see me?"
"It's not how I see you. It's how you are. If I can duplicate you like this, you can trust that I'm more than powerful enough to speak with people from a distance, and don't have any need to sneak people into your sanctuary."
Era kept her eyes on the vision.
"It's a good plan. If and when the time comes, we'll help you get back to the swamps.
You don't mind interrupting our training? You're the ones who forced your way into our home and demanded to learn our secrets.
But let me make this clear. Even if you go to Erasosis and slay the Aedan Rane himself, that doesn't absolve you of your promise to us. You will teach us to capture our history in books, so we can add an eighth spire to this place, the Library of Tanaratane."
"Running out an ordeal never crossed my mind. Even if we were victorious, do you really think I wouldn't come back to finish learning to use the stream?"
Era smiled, half mockingly. "In that case, maybe I'd rather you die in Erasosis."
She led them back to the half-wild forest that stood at the edge of the dead, blasted hills. They picked up where they'd left off the day before, with three of them generating flecks of the stream, while the fourth one tried to access it. After a full round of failure, Dante folded his arms, tapping his elbow. "Bel Era, will you touch the stream for us?"
"Surely," Don't be discouraged by how easy I make it look.
She lowered her chin. The slowly swirling chips of gold assembled into a loose spiral. It looked something like a clock spring, but it looked less like something hammered into shape by a human hand, and more like something made orderly by nature itself. Like the smooth, flat roundness of pebbles in a rushing stream. Aera let the power hang there a moment, then flicked her hand, shattering it back into discrete pieces.
And a second time. Give me a moment first.
Dante reached out for a strand of nether from within himself, grabbed another from Aera, and melded the two together. She snapped her head about to stare at him.
What are you doing?
Watching the process for myself, like you told us to.
I didn't tell you to use your black magic. That's cheating. You're supposed to observe and reason it out on your own.
That's exactly what I'm about to do. To accomplish this, I'm using a perspective none of you have access to. You should appreciate that, as it can only add a new dimension to your knowledge of the Odosein.
Aera grimaced. I don't know what I hate worse, when you are ignorant, or when you're able to twist your logic that far without breaking it.
Go on, then. Subvert your learning with your shadows. It's always worked for me before.
He checked the link between them to ensure it was secure, then nodded.
Aera reached out for the stream.
Through the nether, Dante loomed forward as closely as he could. There was a brief moment of friction between Aera and the sparks. Something seemed to rotate, then to clunk into place. This achieved, the stream came to Aera's hand, waiting to be used.
"Would you do that again?" Dante said. "Slower this time."
While I'm at it, why don't I just tell you exactly what I'm doing?
It would make this go a lot faster. But I agree that it's more important to preserve your traditions than life as we know it.
She gave him a long look. The corner of her mouth twitched.
She turned away and moved her mind toward the stream.
This time, she slowed herself tenfold. Like the first time she made contact with the golden matter, there was a straining, a kind of friction. To Dante's complete shock, Aera reached out to three different sections of the stream at the same time. After a moment of intellectual panic, he focused on one section, watching as she turned the fleck of gold this way and that. Her motions had a logical flow to them, like a mathematical formula or a piece of good music. Before he could forget their sequence, he darted out to the stream himself. At first he couldn't so much as feel it. But as he began to repeat the sequence, it resisted, as if trying to pull back. He quickly repeated the process several times, etching it into his mind. He asked Aera to show him again. She obliged. This time, he observed the second sequence, practicing both it and the first until he had them memorized. He had Aera move on to the final sequence. He repeated it 8 times before he was positive he had it down. Taking a deep breath, he held the third sequence in place, then manipulated the stream with the first and the second. The stream held fast, refusing to be unlocked. Dante backed off, then tried again, progressing from the first sequence to the second to the third. The stream didn't seem to notice. He swore.
"I've been able to watch what you're doing," he told Aera. "But I must have got one of the sequences wrong."
She stared back at him.
Sequences?
The way you have to interact with the stream 3 times to get it to open up to you. I must have made an error somewhere. Can I see you do it again?
If he didn't know better, he would have said she was hiding a smile.
She accessed the stream anew, keeping her motions deliberate and slow. Watching the first sequence, Dante saw that he was right about one thing. The sequence was different from what he was doing. But not in the sense that he'd made a small error that could be solved with a tweak or two. Rather, it was completely different, from start to finish. And it was different from his memorization of the second and third sequences, too. With a sinking stomach, Dante asked Era to access the stream yet again. The first sequence was radically different from both other times he'd watched her execute it. He banged his fist against his thigh.
Son of a bitch! You have to change your approach to the stream every single time you want to use it.
Era relaxed her hold on the stream.
This comes as a surprise to you?
When you summon Nether, it's like channeling a stream of water. Ether is more like emptying yourself and then allowing yourself to be filled with light. In both cases, the general process is the same every time.
Well, apparently that's not true of the stream.
Deal with it.
He weighed the option of launching into an angry tirade versus getting to work. The tirade would provide immediate short-term satisfaction, but it would only delay the greater and long-term satisfaction of actually knowing how to use the God's damned golden stream. Also, Era would only mock him for it. With the grim self-congratulation of doing the responsible thing, Dante moved toward a small gob of stream, turning it about at random. As he fumbled with the patterns of gold, Gledek extended an ethereal link to Era, observing the process for himself. Blaze shadow-walked to see if he could spot any clues from within the netherworld, but soon declared this an utter failure. Volo worked quietly on her own pursuits. Dante accessed one of the sparks. As soon as he attempted to wield it, it pushed back. The tension he'd seen in Era's efforts. After some fumbling around, he released the spark to see if he'd have an easier time with one of the others. It was just as impenetrable as the first. Several attempts later, he'd concluded every one of the golden sparks was unique, resisting his efforts with differing pressures and vectors. In each case, the pushback held a logical suggestion about how to negate that push and delve deeper into the spark's lock. The process of mapping this out felt like fitting pieces into a puzzle, or indeed like tripping the tumblers of a lock. Yet it was far more abstract than that. Once he realized this, Dante was able to make rapid progress through the sequence of responses necessary to access the spark. Sometimes it slipped away from him, obliging him to start over. But as their midday break approached, he completed his first sequence. Grinning, he gave himself a moment to admire his work, but only a moment. He moved on to the second sequence, advancing carefully from one tumbler, or note, he wasn't sure what best described it, to the next. He was still working on the third note of the sequence when the two he'd previously worked out changed shape, expelling him. Rattling off a stream of salty oaths, he switched back to the first sequence and found that the lock, which he'd thought he was all done with, had also expelled his previous work. He'd have to work through a completely new sequence to begin to open the stream. He pushed his palms against his face.
This is ridiculous. It's like trying to pick a lock, right? You have to trip the tumblers in the right order,
Only the lock keeps changing shape while you're working on it, and after you've already opened it.
That's correct, Era said.
What are you so pleased about? This is a huge setback.
But it's not impossible, is it?
Or else we wouldn't be having this conversation, because I wouldn't be Odosein, since it wouldn't exist. And if there were no Odosein, then we wouldn't be able to talk in the first place, as the Lich would have slaughtered our ancestors before they could have us.
Look on the bright side, Blaze put in. At least this time she actually told you that you were right about something.
Not knowing whether to laugh or throw things around, Dante resumed his practice. He'd gotten one sequence finished, and was trying to zip through a second before the first one could change, when his loon throbbed. He hopped to his feet and walked away from the others, particularly Gladick and Era, then activated the loon.
Yes? Is that you, Jonah?
Hope I haven't woken you again, sir.
It's the middle of the afternoon.
Oh, yes, I've noticed. But I wouldn't know nothing about how a nethermancer structures his days. I'd imagine you'd have to stay up awful late to get to talk with the imps and demons.
Imps and demons don't exist, Dante said, and the ones that do are up and running about during the daytime as well.
I must say I find that most unsettling, sir.
Then let's stop talking about it and start talking about why you looned me.
Well, we've found the Knight of the Odosein, Lord. In fact, Captain Naren's speaking to him in the other room right now.
Dante clenched his fist in triumph.
And has he agreed to help us?
That's the exact matter I need to ask you about. The good knight is most interested in destroying the White Lich. I'd go so far as to say he's fanatical. Thing is, he doesn't believe in the slightest that the Odosein at the Silent Spires would ever agree to work with a bunch of dirty outlanders, such as yourselves.
We came to an agreement with them. I was in the middle of our training when you looned me.
Oh, I'll just tell him that then. He didn't believe me the other times I told him as much, but I'm sure this time will be different.
Dante scowled into the distance.
Tell him that Bel Era is as beautiful as a sunrise, but her dedication to fighting the Aedan Rane has made her nearly as terrifying as he is.
Jonah chuffed with laughter.
One moment, Lord.
The loon went dead.
Dante sat there, idling with the pathetic helplessness that was so specific to waiting for someone to reopen a loon connection.
It was only a minute before it pulsed again.
Well, the good knight says that if you think Bel Era is bad, you should try being trained by Five. He would be honored to give his life fighting the Lich by your side.
Dante clenched his fist again, punching the air for good measure.
You have to keep him safe in the meantime. Don't even let him be seen in public.
Suppose we'll cancel the knife-swallowing contest, then.
One more thing, Jonah. We're planning to stay here until we know that the White Lich plans to attack again.
That means we have to know the instant he starts marching on Aerososis.
That means you need plenty of scouts, and some way for them to relay information back to you in as little time as possible. Signal fires or the like.
Captain Naren had that same exact thought, sir. He's already got Tenarians ripping about in their canoes. If you hadn't noticed, they make top-notch watermen. Would love to get a few of them signed up to our crew.
Even if we deposed the main threat, the Tenarians will still have to deal with the Righteous Monsoon. I'm sure you could find a few sailors who'd be happy to get out of the country for a while.
Dante gave a thumbs up to the others.
I need to return to my work. Let me know the instant you see signs of war from the Lich, even if it means interrupting me in the middle of the demon impregnation ritual.
It will be done,
Jonah said. I'm glad to know my lord takes the matter so seriously.
Dante shut down the loon and returned to the others. Our friends in Aerosursus have secured the help of the surviving knight of Odysseine. Belera, if the Lich makes a move, we're going to need to be able to leave at a moment's notice.
It's already taken care of. Do you think we're stupid?
She looked him up and down.
Do you suppose the Aiden Rane will make a second attack on the city?
I thought you guys were the experts on him. What with your entire existence being devoted to stopping him?
As far as I know, you four are the only people currently alive who've squared off against him and survived. If I were an expert on the Aiden Rane and wanted to maintain that expertise as time went on, I might want to go to sources such as yourself for more current information.
Despite having a conversation or two with him, I don't know much about him. Most of our talk centered on things like how I would join him or die. He was a bit one-note on that front, but it's clear he's smart and that, while he's far from reckless, he's willing to make limited gambles. That's a dangerous opponent. Furthermore, he knows that we're a dangerous opponent. I expect we've come closer to killing him than anyone has in a long, long time.
You sound so proud of yourself.
Shouldn't I be?
Did I say it was criticism?
Dante gave her a skeptical look.
My point is that he can't be confident that he can simply bide his time, slowly grow his power, and stick to the safety of the deep swamps until he's sure he's invincible. Not as long as we're still out there. He moved on Aerosursus because he thought it would make him strong enough to slam the door on us. He knows the city can't withstand a second assault. He'll be back to finish the job.
She nodded thoughtfully.
Then you're not likely to have enough time to learn the Odysseine.
We'll see about that. If there's one thing I've learned about sorcery, it's that it doesn't work on the timeline you want it to, for good and for ill.
They broke for lunch. Dante hurried through it, returning to the golden stream as fast as he could. But his haste was in vain. Hard as he tried, he couldn't get through the second sequence before the first one changed shape on him, obsoleting his work. Often he couldn't even complete the first one before it unraveled. The key to the stream seemed to be to pursue all three sequences at once, and to finish them in no more than a few moments. But doing that felt like trying to simultaneously pick three locks with two hands. He went to bed that night, afraid that Era might be right after all. He woke much too early, but knew within moments he wouldn't be able to fall back asleep. Instead, he put himself through the paces of the forest, producing a speckling of stream, then reached out to it. When he was halfway through his first sequence, Blaze opened one eye, directing a filthy look at the faintly glowing pieces of gold.
That's disgusting. Can't you at least do that under the covers?
Dante moved his mind into the nether in the thin rope running from the upper wall to the outer corner of Blaze's bed frame. The rope severed with a crisp snip. The frame jerked downward, thumping Blaze onto the floor.
Damn Tenarian rope, Dante said. It's the finest I've ever seen, and yet it will still fall apart on you at the worst possible time.
When Era brought them to the field at the edge of the living land, the grass smelled of sunlight on dew. Dante's optimism for his progress was as bright as the skies. Yet that day, and the three that followed it,
passed with a dismal lack of concrete steps forward.
Blaze, at least, had finally got to the point where he was able to grapple with the stream.